on radio, on YouTube, streaming live on investtalk.com, and for our podcast subscribers, this is Invest Talk. Independent thinking, shared success. Invest Talk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. Here is KPP Financial Chief Executive Officer, Financial Advisor Justin Klein.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to Invest Talk. This is our May 8th, 2025 edition of Invest Talk. Appreciate you all tuning in for this hour. And it's my job to help you become a better investor over this hour. And it's your job to bring me your investment questions. That's how this works. I bring you my data and perspective that helps you, should help you, have the right frame of mind to make better decisions with your money day after day, week after week, month after month. So that's what this show is about. It's about you, your thoughts, your concerns, and your questions. So I encourage you to call right now at 888-99-CHART. And when you do, you not only help yourself, but you help other Invest Talk listeners as well, because we are a community here. And what's likely on your mind is on the minds of many other Invest Talk listeners as well. So I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and submit a question over there, or just give us a call, 888-99-CHART. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and in just a bit, we'll talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics for the hour. But as usual, we'll tackle this caller question first.
Hi, I'd like to get your thoughts on JEPQ as to whether it's a good income investment and a decent entry price point. Thank you.
All right. I love this question because I actually talked a lot about this on Tuesday. And this is exact type of ETF that people are not understanding correctly. It's all of these covered call ETFs, the equity premium ETFs. This is the JP Morgan NASDAQ equity premium income ETF. And what people are looking at is the 15% SEC yield, the 11% 12-month yield, and they're thinking it's an income ETF. And that's not what this is. Okay. This is simply a lower risk way to invest in the NASDAQ, because that's all you're doing here. It's buying the Qs, NASDAQ 100, and selling call options to bring an income into the portfolio, hedge in the downside, and capture beta decay. And that's what we do for our clients in our covered call strategy called Equity Income Plus. But this one is simply doing that. It's a very simple strategy. You can go do it yourself. You don't have to pay the 35 basis point expense ratio. It's not hard, as long as you have enough shares to buy 100 shares of the Qs, for example. But the point is that you are getting not great performance, below average performance for not a for less risk, yes, but less return as well, much less. Okay, so I'll show you a good example. I'm going to look at the returns of JEPQ. There's has full year 2023, 2024, and year to date. Okay, so in 2023, the Qs gained, and this is what I want to talk about, is it's not about that yield. It's about the total return that you're getting. And that's any investment, but especially these investments, because that yield, quote unquote, is a misnomer. Okay, let's take a look here. You've had 2023 and 2024 that were good years in the stock market, especially the Qs, right? This year, not so good. Okay, so you would think, with a cover call ETF, that you would get better returns in a down year and not as good of returns in an up year. So let's take a look at that. So in 2023, the NASDAQ, the Qs, was up were up 54.85%. JEPQ up only 36%. So it lagged the NASDAQ by nearly 20%, 18% call it. That's not good. That's a big drag. Last year, the Qs were up 25%. JEPQ was up just shy of 25%. So that is okay. A little bit less return. Not dramatic, but a little bit. And that's okay. Because in a down year, you would think that it would hold water better. That it would perform much better than the underlying asset, in this case, the Qs. Let's take a look. This year, the Qs are down 5.33%. JEPQ, down 5.11%. Better, but only marginally so. 20 basis points. So it's not really giving you that safety that you would think it would in a down year. And then the other 2 years when things were good, it drastically underperformed in one and it pretty much slightly underperformed in the other. So overall, this is a bad risk versus reward because you're getting the same downside, but you're not getting nearly the upside. That is called bad risk versus reward. You might as well just own the Qs. So no, don't. I would not own this for income. That's not what this is about. It's about total return. Don't get fooled by these covered call ETFs. They're very popular right now. And it's all because people are just chasing the yield. They're not looking at the total return and their risk-adjusted return. And put simply, they're not very good. Doesn't mean that cover call strategies in general are bad, because there's ways to execute it effectively and get better risk versus return. But the ones that are out there right now, not many of them are very good at that. Now, we have a lot of ground to cover over the next 45 minutes or so, and our main focus point will touch on emergency funds. How much do you have, and how much should you have in 2025? So we'll look at rising costs and economic uncertainty that make financial preparedness more important than ever. So we'll look at that topic. In addition, there's a CEO who is a supply chain whiz, and we're going to look at what he is saying about the current global trade environment. Okay. And then we had the Fed meeting yesterday, and we're going to review that. And then corporate buybacks. Were they helping the market over the past month or so? We'll look at the data there. We also have voice bank questions. One is on the Vanguard US Dollar Emerging Market Government Bond ETF and CoreWeave CRWV. We also have some questions that came in via the comment section of the Invest Talk YouTube channel. And of course, I welcome your finance and investment questions right now at 888-99-CHART. But we're going to head into a short break, and on the other side, I'll talk about today's market activity and take more of your questions on Invest Talk.
Invest Talk is made better when listeners add their voices.
My name is Robert, and I'm from Florida. Great show. I learned so much from just listening to you.
Hi, this is Susan from New Jersey. I'm calling about AXOA.
How much of the information that came out today on the whole AI play with DeepSeek and all that, how much of that information can you really trust?
And Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero are always ready to provide unbiased answers.
I am very much a person that does not trust Chinese data.
Net income is growing and margins are staying pretty steady.
Now let's go take a live call. Paul from Palm Desert.
Let's go to George from San Mateo, who has a question about index funds.
Tell your friends, live a little, live a little. Call InvestTalk weekdays from 4 to 5 p.m. Pacific Time.
Is that a good strategy, or should I be looking at other things?
888-99-CHART. Justin Klein is here, and he's ready with answers to your finance and investment questions. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now let's take a look at the market today. It was a decidedly green day overall, but you definitely came off the highs. We closed well off the highs. You still had a lot of the bigger names close positive. Google's up nearly 2% after the bounce back, after the Apple news that late yesterday that they would take them off the default browser on Safari on the iPhone and replace it with some sort of AI type of feature. So that hurt Google, but they bounced back a little bit. And there was a lot of green, especially in tech, on the back of what looks to be a shift in trade policy around AI chips. Now, I think it's more of an adjustment than some clarity on that. So we'll see how that evolves. But that definitely helped the market today, along with the UK trade deal, which, frankly, it's more optics than anything. It's still a 10% tariff on UK goods. There are some exemptions like Rolls-Royce engines and certain number of cars coming out of the UK, etc. But, you know, it's a trade deal. We get one. We have one. Frankly, only China and the EU matter in the big picture. Most of the other ones are just kind of noise because we don't trade a whole lot, or there wasn't really a high barrier for our goods there anyway. But that certainly helped the market early on, but we certainly faded. And what was underappreciated was the sell-off in the treasury market. You had across the curve, bond yields were up between 7 and 13 basis points, more on the short end. And I think that has to do with the Fed being on pause a little longer and the market thinking, you know, less rate cuts are coming, and maybe even some likelihood that there will be rate hikes in the medium-term future. So that was, I think, under-discussed in markets as everyone talked about trade, and understandably. You had gold finishing down 2.5% on the back of a dollar index that was up 1%. Bitcoin futures are up 5.3%. You had WTI up 3.1%, WTI crude. And yeah, that was the market for today. Initial jobless claims were about in line with consensus. Same with continuing claims. So it didn't, the labor market didn't materially weaken last week, but you certainly are getting more anecdotal evidence of layoffs and more concern from corporations as we go through this earnings season. So that was the market today, and we'll get more news tomorrow. Now, you probably know that we receive finance and investment questions from the comment section over on our YouTube channel. So let's tackle one of those questions now. I'm curious to know what your take on AZL. I'm looking to own it and wonder if it's in a good price range. Let's go take a look at AZO. This is AutoZone. And this has been in a nice uptrend. It's trading at about 25 times, 23 times forward-looking earnings, trading at $3,674 per share. So it's doing $170 next year in earnings, $150 earnings this year. Let's take a look. $60 billion market cap. One thing I like about this call, not scared off by that high price tag. $3,600 per share. It sounds expensive, but can be cheap. Okay. About $10 billion in debt. Modest amount on a $61 billion market cap. You also have enterprise value to EBIT around 16 times, which historically that is near a record high. So that worries me a bit, or at least the highest level it's been in 10 years. Okay. Last time it was this high was back in the 90s when, you know, it was a growth stock. So that worries me a bit on that valuation. Return on invested capital, 61%. So very, very profitable. Although it has come down recently. What is it doing with that cash flow? About $2 billion in free cash flow. It continues to buy back shares. So very good for shareholders that they don't pay a dividend. That's what they do. They take their cash flow and they buy back the shares. So, you know, the momentum's fine. I have no issue with it. It's a good company. The only worry is a bit high valuation, but if they're just plowing all that cash flow back into the shares, then well, then their earnings per share is going to continue to go up. Technically, it is starting to weaken, so I do worry a bit. I'd want this to pull back deeper, maybe into the 3,400 level, and that's probably where I'd pick up AutoZone. AZO. Thanks for the question. Now we're moving into a break, still to come, my focus point, more answers to your questions. And I encourage you to call now on InvestTalk at 888-99-CHART. Bill from Hayward, hang on, you will be next.
The numbers are in. InvestTalk downloads have now surpassed 61 million. Justin Klein and Luke Guerrero provide unbiased answers to your finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's talk to Bill in Hayward looking at APP, which is, I believe, App Lovin. There we go, App Lovin. You own it or looking to buy it?
I have a small position. It's kind of a speculative part of my balanced portfolio. Just wanted to get your take on, you know, it's had a little bit of a run up here. So do you think it'd be a good time to take profits, or would you tend to hold on something like this?
Well, this is in the ad business. And if this continues, these tariffs continue and the uncertainty continues, a lot of these names are going to cut advertising. And they will be right in the heart of it. And so that's what worries me about AppLovin. You even see right now earnings for this year, expectations continue to go lower. And I would worry about that. And if you get a growth stalling out here, you're going to have multiples contract considerably. Right. Earnings right now this year is supposed to be $6.51 on a $339 stock. You know, that's about, it's around a 50 multiple, which is very expensive. And so you had the rollover, you had a bit of a bounce, and let me run a fib on this and give you the resistance level. Yeah, I mean, you hit the 50% retrace level today, and it actually closed near the lows of the day, which to me is overall pretty bearish. And so I would be very reticent to hold on here. I believe the move today, was that based on earnings?
Not sure.
You're not sure, okay. Yeah, because it did have a nice move today. I would take this opportunity to, at bare minimum, trim my position. You know, it's a very expensive name, as you know. It's a growthier name. Its price to sales ratio is 25. As you know, anything over 10 is expensive. Anything over 20 is usually egregious. Now, they have a good balance sheet and they have good cash flow, but their cash flow is $2 billion on a $105 billion enterprise value. It's a 2% free cash flow yield. It's just very, very expensive. So I would be at least trimming right at these levels. Thanks for the call.
Thanks, Justin.
No problem. My main focus point concerns this topic. Why your emergency fund should be $35,000 in 2025. And, you know, in times of uncertainty, most people start to rely on their emergency fund, or at least look at it and figure out whether they have enough. And this is a calculation of the cost of 6 months of housing, utilities, food, medical care, and car payments for the average U.S. household for at least two people. And if you add those all up, comes out to $35,217.73. So round that down, $35,000. That's up $2,000 from last year.
Now, a lot of that cost increase comes from healthcare and automotive expenses. And this is on typically the high end. Most advisors like us say you want 3 to 6 months of expenses. If you're working, if you're retired, should probably be a year to 2 years in something super stable, because you don't have the flexibility to go and find a new job or a second job or anything like that. You are retired. Now, this number equals to about 40% of the average U.S. household annual income. And this could prevent the average person from making rash decisions, especially with their investments during rougher times. And if you look at the median balance of all transaction accounts, so think of accounts you can easily liquidate, spend out of, for the average U.S. household, it's only $8,742. That's the median. Only enough to cover about a month and a half of expenses for the average American household. Now, a survey said that 43% of those would dip into their savings account in a hypothetical financial emergency. So that's where this emergency fund comes in. But the question is it enough, right? And that's what this is calculating. So 35 to me is kind of the base number. It can go a little higher, a little lower, depending on your expenses, your overhead. If you have kids, for example, all of those factors can easily push this up to $40,000, $50,000, $60,000. Now, other people would say, I'll work more in an emergency, or I'll borrow money from somebody or the bank, or postpone payments or cut spending. But sometimes those things are not always available. Right? It's not, maybe a job, second job isn't available. Maybe you can't borrow money from the bank, etc. Now, where should you keep your emergency fund? Well, probably in a high-yield savings account, money market, even a short-term treasury ETF. That's a good one as well. Those are good places to keep your money liquid, safe, but still earn a decent yield. Now, in the next Invest Talk, we'll look into this question. Will mortgage rates drop in a recession? We'll hit on that story tomorrow. But for now, I'm Justin Klein. I'm ready to take your calls now at 888-99-CHART.
Invest Talk. Your questions are free. The answers are unbiased. Justin Klein is here now. 888-99-CHART.
We're excited to introduce the brand new Invest Talk store, your destination for exclusive Invest Talk merchandise created for savvy investors. You can shop now, discover apparel and accessories that celebrate your financial journey. And as a special bonus, the first 25 orders to the website will receive a free copy of Above Average Investing for the Average Investor by Steve Peasley. Just visit investtalkstore.com to shop the launch. And now let's play a new listener question. We get calls from across America and around the world. This one came in from Denmark.
Hello, Invest Talk. This is Yannick from Denmark. Thank you for your awesome show. I have a question about ticker VEMT. It's the USD Emerging Markets Government Bond Usage ETF. I picked this up at the price of 37 euros. It's like an all-time low point. So I was thinking that I did a pretty good job in regards to the timing. But since I've heard you talk about bond ETFs, I was wondering what you think about this bond play here. I know that you will probably look at the bond maturities in the ETF, and they are mostly above 5 years, I think, and the credit quality as well. But actually, it was Steve Peasley in one of the last shows I listened with him live, may he rest in peace, where he actually advised to buy the emerging markets bonds soon after 2022. Anyway, let me hear what you think. Thank you very much. Bye.
All right, looking at the Vanguard US dollar emerging market government bond ETF. Now, this is looks like it's listed in London. Okay, so I'm looking this up on a different system, so bear with me here. Now, the first thing you have to understand is that these are currency hedged. That's why it's the US dollar ETF. And I actually don't like that. I rather own the Vanguard Emerging Market Government Bond outright because they tend to rally when the dollar is weaker. And this one isn't going to get that those currency headwinds or tailwinds, excuse me. So I would rather just own a different ETF, very similar potentially, and not be currency hedged. Okay. Now, what I do want to figure out is the fund statistics. Let me think of the holdings here. Like I said, I'm looking at it, it's on a difference. Top 10 holdings. Okay, you have Argentina, you have Mexico. Yeah, usually I look at this on Morningstar. Now I'm looking at FactSet because this has the foreign data that Morningstar typically doesn't have. Yeah. I don't have the data on, I want to see the duration. I wouldn't want to take a lot of duration risk. I'm not seeing that here. And once again, I want exposure to the emerging markets. I think they're, you know, the US is becoming more like an emerging market. So if before US was this bastion of strength and it was viewed as, you know, US exceptionalism, but now we have, you know, economic policy that is creating challenges, you have over indebted treasury, you have a weaker dollar, for example. All of this is creating, making it look like the US is an emerging market. And so comparatively, emerging markets should do better compared to the US dollar. So I don't mind it. I just don't want to be hedging out that foreign currency risk. Let's make it two in a row. Here comes another caller question from 888-99-CHART.
I'm just calling to wondering how CoreWeaver, what your opinion is about that. CRWD, as Victor. Again, CoreWeaver, that went IPO in March. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
All right, looking at CoreWeave, CRWV. And this is a name that IPO'd, started trading in the high 30s. Now it's at 55. And if you look at, let's pull up some of the data, CRWV. Earnings for this year are supposed to be negative 27 cents. $26 billion market cap. So it's earning 14 cents next year in a $55 stock. It's egregiously overpriced. Simple as that. This is not a shock. Most IPOs are overpriced. And this one IPO because it is in the AI cloud infrastructure space. It has proprietary software and cloud services that deliver automation and efficiencies needed to manage these AI infrastructure systems at scale. The problem is that it's a lot of hype. And usually how IPOs work is they keep a small float, meaning the amount of shares that are traded pale in comparison to the amount of shares outstanding. And so they keep that limited. And the owners, the founders and early investors, et cetera, they have a lockup period. Typically it's 6 months. It can shift, but typically it's 6 months. And after that 6 months, they are unlocked, they can go sell, and they realize those huge gains that they've earned throughout the years. And that increases the float, number of shares that are out there being traded, the volume. And usually the stock enters a downtrend sometime between 6 months and a year after it went public, especially for names that are overhyped and overpriced.
And CoreWeave is exactly that. Doesn't make money. It's supposed to make money next year. But will it continue with that growth? Can it grow into this egregious valuation? Could. But more often than not, it doesn't. And it will go through that ultimate multiple contraction once the lockup period ends. So that's what I would wait for. I'd be patient on it. Good growth name. Could eventually get there. But you want it at much better valuations than you're getting now. And you're likely to see those over the coming couple of years. So I'm passing on CoreWeave. Now let's touch a bit on supply chains. And there's one company that knows more about supply chains than almost any other, especially when it relates to small businesses, and that's called Flexport. And the CEO's Ryan Peterson, and he's now speaking up. And he's saying that if these tariffs stay in place, thousands of American companies will fail, and millions of employees will lose their jobs. And he knows this because those companies are his customers. And he says what's happening now is not pretty. And he can track exactly how much it costs to ship an item to anywhere, how much those tariffs are, etc. And he recently took social media and talked about how those companies are doomed without changes to these tariff policies. And I love his quote, which is, supply chains are like refrigerators. Everyone needs them. No one knows how they work. And he has about 13,000 of these small customers. They sell electronics, furniture, clothing, toys, diapers, pet supplies, basically everything. And he's sounding the alarm. And he's saying these companies are stuck because it was impossible to plan. A, because there was no kind of heads up on how much these tariffs are going to be. And in many instances, there's just not the ability to change their supply chain. They don't have alternatives. Now, when companies place an order, it takes about 90 days before their goods are ready for shipping. Which means they couldn't have, when they place those orders, understand exactly what they were getting into from a tariff perspective. Now, many companies did load up, especially bigger ones that had the balance sheet capacity, to load up before the tariffs. And that's why you saw GDP go negative in the first quarter. It wasn't really necessarily because the economy was terrible. It was mainly because net exports. Net exports means the imports were much larger than previous months. So right now there's inventory, but he sees when the downstream consequences of the 60% drop in shipments from China right now feed into the system, there will be shortages in 2 to 3 months. And so it's important to pay attention to the people that see it on the ground firsthand. And Flexport is one of those that has a real strong live look at what's happening in the broader economy because they know exactly how many ships are headed our way, landed, etc., and how the companies looking to import are handling the situation. Now let's try another fresh question from the comments section over on our Invest Talk YouTube channel. And Jake Samuels says, what do you think of Four, F-O-U-R? They just creatively financed an acquisition of GB.
What do you think of that deal and Four as an investment company? All right, take a look at FOUR. This is Shift Four Payments, and it provides integrated payment processing and technology solutions here in the United States. Now, typically these payment companies are very, very good businesses. And this is really no different. Return equity about 22%. Let me take a look at the chart. That's going to tell me a whole lot. I know you had a name like Fiserv recently have a tough earnings announcement. And so that sank and really has been struggling since. And Four had peaked out back in February around $127 per share. Now we're at $85. Recent low around 70. But it's in a downtrend. And I don't love that. Now, earnings this year are supposed to drop 3%. And it's about a mid-teens multiple. Although earnings are supposed to reaccelerate next year. On a cash flow perspective, they have about nearly $300 million in free cash flow on a $7.6 billion enterprise value. That's not great. Not a great free cash flow yield. And free cash flow isn't really growing. No dividend. And they're taking that money. Are they buying back shares with that cash flow? Not really. They're basically using it to pay down debt, which is not a bad thing. But overall, I'm just not a huge fan of this name. I don't know enough about that acquisition. It could be great. I'm not sure. It looks like they're borrowing money to do that. I'm not sure what yield that is. Let me look that up here. Yeah, if you'll look at that yield. Trying to find the data here. 6.75%. Not terrible. So I don't mind it, but I think there's just better uses of your capital and better payment processors that are out there. Now let's drop in another caller question now.
Hi, I want to know your thoughts on Cameco Corp. I believe the ticker symbol is CCJ. I had this stock for a few months. Just want to know if I should sell and sell how much. Looking forward to your thoughts on the podcast. Thanks.
All right, looking at Cameco. This is a Canadian uranium miner. Generally, we like uranium plays over the long term. This one, however, curious, we did trim it back a bit today. Not dramatically. We still like it longer term, but it's from a technical perspective, it's turned more neutral. It's been in a choppy period for about a year. We've owned it for a long time. We wanted to take some chips off the table after this recent rally. So I would probably do the same. I'd probably trim it. But we do like it longer term because we do see uranium use increasing. We have dozens of reactors in China opening almost every year, and they're going to be an energy powerhouse. We'll probably catch up at some point, and I think that will really spark uranium prices. And so I'm still bullish uranium longer term, but the neutral chart just gives me more pause to the overweight. We were overweight the position and we brought it back to more neutral weight. And so, yeah, this is a time that I'd probably trim a little, but I wouldn't eliminate it completely. Now, this is Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here each and every weekday, and that's to help you achieve your own version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in right now at 888-99-SHARP.
. 2025 rolls on, and you might have some fresh questions for Justin or Luke. Call InvestTalk 888-99-CHART.
I'm calling today about Modine Manufacturing, ticker symbol MOD. It's a small or mid-cap company that caught my eye. It actually has thermal management solutions for cars, but also data centers. So I was thinking about a picks and shovels play on data centers and stuff like that. And I'm wondering if you could take a look at the numbers and let me know what you think. Am I too late to have a position in this stock? and let me know, please. Thank you. Always appreciate your guys' time. Bye.
All right, looking at Modine Manufacturing. M-O-D is the symbol. That's a name that had a bunch of hype and around AI, and it had a huge run from the teens just about a year and a half ago, all the way up to a recent high around $145 per share. Recent low was right around 65. Now we're bounced up to about 93 at the close today. And it's certainly into some overhead resistance. And it's in a downtrend. It's right at the almost at the 100-day moving average. And frankly, it's right at, yeah, like I said, overhead resistance around this 95 level. So technically, this is not a good time to buy it. It probably needs to consolidate here to help potentially break through. But the main problem is the fact that its earnings expectations just continue to wane. And revenue growth is only supposed to be in the mid-single digits for this year. Earnings in the low teens. And there's a lot of worry that the data center deployment speed will slow down considerably. And so I like that you're looking at the picks and shovels. I'm a big fan of that. Problem is that the valuations have just outrun the share price. Free cash flow is only $100 million. And it's a $5 billion enterprise value. So what you're talking about is a 2% free cash flow yield. Not very good. Now, what are they doing with that cash flow? They're issuing more shares, diluting shareholders. And I think that's going to be a headwind to the stock price. Now, it's profitable. It's very profitable. Return equity is around 20%. The issue, though, is really over the last decade or so, it's mainly been only marginally profitable, and it's never maintained this level of profitability for a long period of time. So I like the way you're thinking. I like the way you're thinking about the picks and shovels aspect of the AI plays, data center plays, etc. I tend to like those type of businesses, especially when it comes to kind of commoditized type of products like data centers. You know, that capacity is capacity. And it's not necessarily, there's not a whole lot of differentiation there. And so I think that the companies that are enabling those data centers to be built are the ones that you want to invest in. However, due to tariffs, due to, I think, overcommitment in capacity, you're going to get a slowdown. And Modine is going to feel that and is already feeling that. So based on the valuation, I just would not be buying it at this point. And in that chart, like I said, you've rallied into resistance. And until that downturn breaks, I would be very patient. Now, let's talk a bit about buybacks. And, you know, the market bounced in April after the big sell-off. And there was one big thing helping that. It was a monster corporate share repurchasing program across the market. According to JP Morgan's data, the S&P 500's first week plunge and recovery had U.S. companies buying back stock at the fastest pace in years. Okay, so this makes sense because there's a lot of reticence to deploy capital because of the uncertainty. You know, do you build factories? Do you launch new products? Do you build? Do you even invest in R&D so that you have new products to come out with in the future, etc.? So when that happened, they were instead forced in many ways to buy back their own shares. And they did that in spades. So that, along with the
the dip buying community, especially the retail community, that's what really has driven the bounce in markets throughout the month of April and here into early May. Well, that about does it. This has been an Invest Talk program, and we appreciate you tuning in and liking and subscribing to our YouTube channel and our podcast. You can find our podcast episodes anytime at iTunes, Spotify, or Google Play. And be sure to rate and review on iTunes as well. And remember, if you need help understanding your risk tolerance level and whether your long-term financial goals are likely to be met based on your investment strategy and the underlying market environment, I encourage you to head over to investtalk.com and schedule a free portfolio review with me or Luke. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Invest Talk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.